Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Hyperion by Dan Simmons, performed by Victor Bavine, Allison Johnson, Kevin Pariseau, Jay Snyder, Mark Vitor, produced by Audible Inc.
Prologue. The Hegemony Consul sat on the balcony of his ebony spaceship and played Rachmaninoff's Prelude in C-sharp minor on an ancient but well-maintained Steinway, while great, green, saurian things surged and bellowed in the swamps below. A thunderstorm was brewing to the north. Bruise-black clouds silhouetted a forest of giant gymnosperms, while stratocumulus towered 9 kilometers high in a violent sky. Lightning rippled along the horizon. Closer to the ship, occasional vague reptilian shapes would blunder into the interdiction field, cry out, and then crash away through indigo mists. The consul concentrated on a difficult section of the prelude and ignored the approach of storm and nightfall. The fatline receiver chimed. The consul stopped, fingers hovering above the keyboard, and listened. Thunder rumbled through the heavy air. From the direction of the gymnosperm forest, there came the mournful ululation of a carrion breed pack. Somewhere in the darkness below, a small-brained beast trumpeted its answering challenge and fell quiet. The interdiction field added its sonic undertones to the sudden silence. The fat line chimed again.
"Damn,"
said the consul, and went in to answer it. While the computer took a few seconds to convert and decode the burst of decaying tachyons, the consul poured himself a glass of scotch. He settled into the cushions of the projection pit, just as the disky blinked green.
"Play,"
he said.
"You have been chosen to return to Hyperion,"
came a woman's husky voice. Full visuals had not yet formed. The air remained empty except for the pulse of transmission codes, which told the consul that this fat-lined squirt had originated on the Hegemony administration world of Tau Ceti Center. The consul did not need the transmission coordinates to know this. The aged but still beautiful voice of Mayna Gladstone was unmistakable.
"You have been chosen to return to Hyperion as a member of the Shrike Pilgrimage," continued the voice.
"The hell you say,"
thought the consul, and rose to leave the pit.
"You and 6 others have been selected by the Church of the Shrike and confirmed by the All-Thing,"
said Mayna Gladstone.
"It is in the interest of the Hegemony that you accept."
The consul stood motionless in the pit, his back to the flickering transmission codes. Without turning, he raised his glass and drained the last of his scotch.
"The situation is very confused,"
said Mayna Gladstone. Her voice was weary.
"The consulate and Home Rule Council fatlined us 3 standard weeks ago, with the news that the time tomb showed signs of opening. The anti-entropic fields around them were expanding rapidly, and the Shrike has begun ranging as far south as the Bridal Range."
The consul turned and dropped into the cushions. A hollow had formed of Mayna Gladstone's ancient face. Her eyes looked as tired as her voice sounded.
"A force-based task force was immediately dispatched from Parvati to evacuate the Hegemony citizens on Hyperion before the time tombs open. Their time debt will be a little more than 3 Hyperion years.
Mayna Gladstone paused. The consul thought he had never seen the Senate CEO look so grim.
"We do not know if the evacuation fleet will arrive in time,"
she said.
"But the situation is even more complicated. An ouster migration cluster of at least 4,000 units has been detected approaching the Hyperion system, Our evacuation task force should arrive only a short while before the ousters.
The consul understood Gladstone's hesitation. An ouster migration cluster might consist of ships ranging in size from single-person ram scouts to can cities and comet forts holding tens of thousands of the interstellar barbarians.
The force joint chiefs believe that this is the ouster's big push,
said Mayna Gladstone. The ship's computer had positioned the hollow so that the woman's sad brown eyes seemed to be staring directly at the consul.
Whether they seek to control just Hyperion for the time tombs, or whether this is an all-out attack on the world web, remains to be seen. In the meantime, a full force-space battle fleet, complete with a Farcaster construction battalion, has spun up from the CAM system to join the evacuation task force. But this fleet may be recalled, depending upon circumstances.
The consul nodded and absently raised the scotch to his lips. He frowned at the empty glass and dropped it onto the thick carpeting of the hollow pit. Even with no military training, he understood the difficult tactical decision Gladstone and the Joint Chiefs were faced with. Unless a military Farcaster were hurriedly constructed in the Hyperion system, at staggering expense, there would be no way to resist the ouster invasion. Whatever secrets the Time Tombs might hold would go to the hegemony's enemy. If the fleet did construct a Farcaster in time, and the hegemony committed the total resources of force to defending the single, distant, colonial world of Hyperion, the world web ran the terrible risk of suffering an ouster attack elsewhere on the perimeter, or, in a worst-case scenario, having the barbarians actually seizing the Farcaster and penetrating the web itself. The consul tried to imagine the reality of armored ouster troops stepping through Farcaster portals into the undefended home cities on 100 worlds. The consul walked through the hollow of Mayna Gladstone, retrieved his glass, and went to pour another scotch.
You have been chosen to join the pilgrimage to the Shrike,
said the image of the old CEO, whom the press loved to compare to Lincoln or Churchill or Alvarez Temp or whatever other pre-Hegira legend was in historical vogue at the time.
The Templars are sending their tree ship, Yggdrasil,
said Gladstone.
And the evacuation task force commander has instructions to let it pass. With a 3-week time debt, you can rendezvous with the Yggdrasil before it goes quantum from the Parvati system. The 6 other pilgrims chosen by the Shrike Church will be aboard the tree ship. Our intelligence reports suggest that at least one of the 7 pilgrims is an agent of the ousters. We do not, at this time, have any way of knowing which one it is.
The consul had to smile. Among all the other risks Gladstone was taking, the old woman had to consider the possibility that he was the spy and that she was fatlining crucial information to an ouster agent. Or had she given him any crucial information? The fleet movements were detectable as soon as the ships used their hawking drives. And if the consul were the spy, the CEO's revelation might be a way to scare him off. The consul's smile faded, and he drank his scotch.
Saul Weintraub and Fedmon Kassad are among the 7 pilgrims chosen,
said Gladstone. The consul's frown deepened. He stared at the cloud of digits flickering like dust motes around the old woman's image. 15 seconds of fat-line transmission time remained.
We need your help,
said Mayna Gladstone.
It is essential that the secrets of the Time Tombs and the Shrike be uncovered. This pilgrimage may be our last chance. If the ousters conquer Hyperion, their agent must be eliminated and the Time Tomb sealed at all cost. The fate of the hegemony may depend upon it.
The transmission ended, except for the pulse of rendezvous coordinates. Response? Asked the ship's computer. Despite the tremendous energies involved, the spacecraft was capable of placing a brief, coded squirt into the incessant babble of FTL bursts which tied the human portions of the galaxy together.
No,
said the consul, and went outside to lean on the balcony railing. Night had fallen, and the clouds were low. No stars were visible. The darkness would have been absolute, except for the intermittent flash of lightning to the north, and a soft phosphorescence rising from the marshes. The consul was suddenly very aware that he was, at that second, the only sentient being on an unnamed world. He listened to the antediluvian night sounds rising from the swamps, and he thought about morning, about setting out in the Vikan EMV at first light, about spending the day in sunshine, about hunting big game in the fern forests to the south, and then returning to the ship in the evening for a good steak and a cold beer. The consul thought about the sharp pleasure of the hunt, and the equally sharp solace of solitude. Solitude he had earned through the pain and nightmare he had already suffered on Hyperion.
Hyperion.
The consul went inside, brought the balcony in, and sealed the ship just as the first heavy raindrops began to fall. He climbed the spiral staircase to his sleeping cabin at the apex of the ship. The circular room was dark except for silent explosions of lightning, which outlined rivulets of rain coursing the skylight. The consul stripped, lay back on the firm mattress, and switched on the sound system and external audio pickups. He listened as the fury of the storm blended with the violence of Wagner's Flight of the Valkyries. Hurricane winds buffeted the ship. The sound of thunderclaps filled the room as the skylight flashed white, leaving afterimages burning in the consul's retinas.
Wagner is good only for thunderstorms,
he thought. He closed his eyes, but the lightning was visible through closed eyelids. He remembered the glint of ice crystals blowing through the tumbled ruins on the low hills near the time tombs, and the colder gleam of steel on the shrike's impossible tree of metal thorns. He remembered screams in the night and the hundred-facet, ruby-and-blood gaze of the shrike itself.
Hyperion.
The consul silently commanded the computer to shut off all speakers and raised his wrist to cover his eyes. In the sudden silence he lay thinking about how insane it would be to return to Hyperion. During his 11 years as consul on that distant and enigmatic world, the mysterious Church of the Shrike had allowed a dozen barges of off-world pilgrims to depart for the wind-swept barrens around the Time Tombs, north of the mountains. No one had returned. And that had been in normal times, when the Shrike had been prisoner to the tides of time and forces no one understood, and the anti-entropic fields had been contained to a few dozen meters around the Time Tombs, and there had been no threat of an ouster invasion. The consul thought of the Shrike, free to wander everywhere on Hyperion, of the millions of indigenes and thousands of hegemony citizens helpless before a creature which defied physical laws and which communicated only through death, and he shivered despite the warmth of the cabin.
Hyperion.
The night and storm passed. Another storm front raced ahead of the approaching dawn. Gymnosperms 200 meters tall bent and whipped before the coming torrent. Just before first light, the consul's ebony spaceship rose on a tail of blue plasma and punched through thickening clouds as it climbed toward space and rendezvous.